Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only. Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Welcome to Two Words Wolves Pod. I'm Ryan Ecton. With me is Leo San. Leo, how you doing?
I am exhausted, Ryan. Not from Wolves basketball for once. I had a long extended weekend where I was mostly just keeping my mom entertained. We share the same birthday, so our birthday was on Monday. I'll drop my Venmo in the social media links in case y'all want to donate. No, but I spent too much time driving. I got home yesterday around 11 p.m. Pacific last night, and I'm older now, a year older, and like my back hurts more. And Ryan, I'm curious, like, at what age did you stop celebrating like your birthday? As in, like, yes, celebration. It's just like, oh, it's just a day.
Well, as a dad of a 2-year-old, it's definitely like the minute you have a kid, it just kind of, it's over. I don't think I've had like a proper birthday party. I don't even know, since I was like 21, I think.
Okay. Well,
and
Ryan,
even that was just like going out to the bar with buddies at 21. So like, even that wasn't even all that crazy.
Well, next time, Ryan, when I'm in Minnesota, we're going to do a joint birthday party where I'm going to bring my Nintendo 64 and we're going to play some Mario Party. We're going to order some pizza and we're going to stay up all night and watch some rated R movies. So just so we can have a proper birthday party for you.
Yeah, well, I got a 64 down here, so if you don't even need to bring the console. Just we'll bring the controllers. We'll go 4-way and we'll play some Smash, play some Kart. It'll be great.
Well, Ryan, little known factor, you probably know this by now, but prior to COVID, when there was a lot more social get-togethers, I was a ranked Smash 64 player here in the Southern California region.
Was it 64? I thought it was. Yeah. Which one? Brawl? I thought it was the GameCube one.
Melee. No. I was not ranked in Melee. That's definitely the more popular one. But I was ranked in 64, mm-hmm. and so I've competed in some national tournaments. So, if any of you listeners ever want to catch some hands, see me on the sticks. You know, you can still get it. Anyone can get it.
I have a good 64 story. This was a long time ago when my brother and I were young. Basically, we didn't... I'm trying to think of how old we would have been. 9 and 6, 10 and 7, that general area. We were playing Smash from my brother's house, or my cousin's house. And basically, we didn't know if you've played Super Smash on the 64, that like, so if you get sucked up by Yoshi's egg, that if you like mash the A button, you'll break out.
Right.
Well... didn't know that they didn't. So I was playing as Yoshi and whoever he was, and I was like egging him off the edge multiple times. If you know the stage with, it's the Mario stage with like the moving platform at the bottom and the bridge up top or whatever. And I was just like Yoshiing him off the edge. Simple, like if you knew even at like 15, you'd know what to do. Just mash the button and recover. But it was just like so classic, like older brother, younger brother stuff that I was just terrorizing him with Yoshi.
That's the start of his villain arc for sure. That was his like Joker moment. It was just you repeatedly just spamming his neutral B and just pooping him out the side of the stage every time.
Yeah, that's just class. It's almost like I know if you're it sounds like you played competitively, and it's just like the margins are so thin in that, where it's almost more fun when you're a kid and you have no freaking clue what's going on, and it's just like, that's just so classical, you're cheating, it's like,
right,
get better, dude, get good.
Yeah, I've been little brothered before by my older brothers in different games and like a WCW versus NWO like wrestling game, and I've cried a lot over it, I'm not gonna lie. But you know what, Ryan? Enough about this trauma. Why don't we head into something little less triggering than getting picked on by older brothers?
Let's just make it a Smash podcast. Let's just talk about 64 Smash all day.
I could do that. That's we're gonna have to start two words: Smash 64 after this. So.
Awesome. Let's go into it. Howl or foul, Leo. The Wolves have won 3 in a row. They did it. They were in really 5 of 6. They were 2 and 3. The competition has been subpar. We'll go with that. But yeah, Leo, 3-game win streak. Howl or foul on the Wolves team turning the corner.
I'm gonna go with foul. And I know I just talked about, let's like not talk about something negative, and I'm gonna immediately poo-poo this. I am as much of a believer in play who's in front of you. You know, celebrate the easy wins. You know, it's a long season. You can't just be here and be like, I'm waiting for April, May basketball. It's like, no, you got to enjoy the time. So I understand that, but I feel like the Wolves do have to still show that they've leveled up a little bit before I could really feel better about the team's outlook. Yes, maybe they turned a corner in the microcosm of things. It was a little rickety when Ant was out, and when they got beat by the Knicks, it was kind of like, man, like we really got crushed. Can we even compete? But I think they have turned maybe that mini corner, but I would say just as a team and what its goals in general are, which is making it past the Western Conference Finals and making it into the finals. You know, we won't know if they turn that corner until it's June and they're still playing basketball, but I'm not a believer that they fully turn a corner. The 3-game win streak is great. These are all teams they were supposed to beat. And we'll talk about the future upcoming schedule later too. They still have a number of games that they're supposed to win. But in the meantime, yeah, I'm saying foul. Ryan, do you feel like they've turned a corner for you?
Yeah, I'm going to go howl. I do feel like they have. I was just at, we're recording this late Wednesday night, and I was at the Zach Lowe podcast live recording at First Ave. I will say my first time at First Ave, which as a Minnesotan, with that being such an iconic Prince location, felt a little, it was something I needed to do, go to First Half. So good that Western Conference Power Rankings starting off their pod was a good baptism into First Half. Usually it's rock music. In this case, it was Power Rankings. But they had the Wolves, him and Zach Lowe and Rob Mahoney had the Wolves 3rd and 4th in their Power Rankings, above, clearly behind OKC Denver, but very much seemingly a half step above the whatever 6 through 10 you want to talk about. The three they had interchangeably with them in Houston, which I think is fair. And I just think like that reminds me of how like this is the Wolves are an established team in the Western Conference. Like the teams below them were like San Antonio, the Lakers, and the Rockets for Zach at least. And he kind of went through and talked about, like, the Spurs are just young, the Lakers are old, and at least in terms of sciatica, LeBron are old, and the Rockets are just weird, and the Wolves are just an established team. And that's kind of why I'm going to say how they have turned the corner, not because they've won 3 in a row and against crappy opponents, not because it's been a weird thing where I think other than the Portland win and the loss to the Lakers without LeBron and Reeves, like, they basically just won the games you're supposed to and lost the games that, not that you're supposed to lose, but just games that you, in and of themselves, were not a bad loss. Like I said, the Portland, I think at Portland is a solid win this year. That's a lot [S2] Right. [S1] Of good teams will struggle to win out there. And [S2] Yep. [S1] Just you lose at home to the Lucas Lakers that was needed one more stop, couldn't get it. But other than that, it's just like, yeah, you lost to Denver, second out of back to back, whatever. Even like Luka torches you one night. Okay. Or like that's not great, but you live with it. And every other, like, just blown out Utah, Sacramento. So I just like I know like there's a little bit of like consternation of they haven't beat anyone good yet. I would just argue it's 11 games. Just wait. Like, good chance that they have a Sacramento, Denver back-to-back, good chance they have decent chance, like they blow it against Sacramento and then beat Denver, and it's just like all the narratives about beating good teams, losing to bad teams, whatever, all gets flipped on its head. But it just kind of reminds me, like, the Wolves are just good. Like, I don't think, it kind of feels like the fan base wants to freak out. They want a reason to, and myself included too, but it's just like, this is a solid team. And one thing I've been craving over the past year, where it just kind of feels like last year they were fighting to get into the play-in. The year before that, they were fighting for the one seed. And the year before that, they were again fighting to get out of the play-in or just make the playoffs. And this year, I think it's just going to be like, this day-to-day seedings, I don't think, are going to matter as much as it has in the past few years. In the sense of, I think the Wolves are kind of, it's going to take them kind of imploding a little bit to not be in the top six. And the minute you're in the top six, I'm not sure it's really going to matter. In the sense of, really the only thing you, if you can get lucky, I do think OKC and Denver are clearly the top two teams. If you can try to get lucky and like get in a bracket without those two teams, that'd be the goal. But ultimately, there's a good chance those are the top two teams in the conference, and there's no way to avoid going through both of them. So I kind of, going back to turning the corner, I just think they're going to be a solid team. The playoff seedings aren't going to matter. You're going to have a half-decent first-round opponent that you should beat, and then you're probably going to get to a second round against OKC or Denver, and the season's going to come down to, can you beat one or both of those teams?
Yeah, it's not all corners are created equal, right? Yeah, I think that, you know, there's a very big corner ahead of them, yeah, which is the elephant in the room, which is the OKC Thunder. And I'm not saying that just because that's the team that the Wolves ultimately lost to. They've just been steamrolling teams. I mean, they've lost one game so far. As we're recording, they're blowing out the Lakers by, you know, 30 to 40 points right now. And it's pretty wild. You know, there's going to be teams that are going to stumble and fall. I mean, even against the Nuggets, when we lost that game, you said it was a back-to-back. We were also without Anthony Edwards, and they were up. The Wolves were up going into half, and they were competitive through three quarters. And so it took a Jamal Murray explosion for them to win. So, yeah, I agree with you that, you know, they've turned maybe some of the smaller corners, but they're still working on some of the bigger corners here. And, you know, we'll see what happens. It's the Thunder are scary, but every other team is going to have slip-ups. I think it's – I agree with you. We got to take the season into context, not freak out over two small ones, but enjoy the small wins. So, yeah, you know, I think they're definitely going in a good direction, though. It would be a lot more – we'd be having a different conversation if they lost one or even two of these games against, you know, the Jazz or the Kings. So, I'm enjoying it. It's a good small corner. I'm going to wait till I see it until they play some of the better teams, and that might not be till into December here in our schedule.
Yeah. And I guess my bigger point is, like, I feel like everyone is so, like, the narrative for, and rightly so, for a few years now, is like, they struggle against the bad teams. And so it just kind of feels like, okay, now they're kicking the bad teams' butt. Like, you can't have it both ways. Like, we need to, like, at least be like, a good example of this is kind of the second Utah win, second out of a back-to-back. Did they play necessarily well in that game? Three, other than the third quarter? Probably not. But in today's NBA, a road back-to-back, you're able to win both of them. I almost don't care who you're playing. That's a solid win. A lot of teams, that's a place where a good number of teams are going to get tripped up on the second out of back-to-back in semi-altitude, not quite Denver altitude, but like Salt Lake City is it? There's a little bit of that, the lack of oxygen there. Like, that's a factor.
Yeah, you lose time.
I just thought that was a solid win. It, at the very least, like, it just points to, like, they're a step above, like, 20 of the teams in the NBA. The Wolves are just clearly, to me, a step above them, and that basically, at least in the last 20 years, has almost never been the case.
Yeah, I think it's worth being excited that the team is winning, and I, for one, will never take winning for granted with the Timberwolves, even if it's against tanking teams, and when they rattle off three, I'm in a great mood, and so I was excited that this year they got to win on my birthday. Last year they lost against, I think I mentioned the last episode that we recorded together, they lost to the Heat on the Nikola Jovic game-winning shot or layup that he had there. So, yeah, you know, I'm happy with it. You know, speaking of things that are going well, we'll move into topic number two. The Timberwolves are fourth in offensive rating through 11 games. How or foul, Ryan, will they finish top five in offensive rating?
I'm going to say how. I think this offensive boomlet that they've had over the past probably couple weeks here, I think this is who this team is. I know their narratives coming into the season were like, this is a defensive team. And obviously 2 years ago, they finished first in defense. And so that's what we all want to focus, myself included. Like, I know we'll just keep kind of going back to our gentleman's wager of the offense defense from last year that I ended up being right. But I don't think you weren't wrong. You were just early in the sense of, I just think This is one of the better offensive teams in the NBA. Obviously, you have Ant. Randall is just playing out of his mind. Awesome. Probably the best basketball of his career to this point. And then Jaden is offensively just clearly making the leap everyone has wanted and expected from him. And I just think, like, those three combined with, I don't think Rudy has been the offensive liability that so often we've kind of seen in the court. And you add in Dante, Mike certainly can hit knockdown shots, and Nas. This should be a team that I believe will finish top five on offense. And so if they can get the defense into the top 10, average, closer to average with Rudy off the court, and a solid team with Rudy on the court, I think that's the formula for this team.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Yeah, it's 13% into the season, and I'm going to take my victory lap that the Wolves are top five offensive rating. Obviously, there's a lot of season left to go, but I agree with you, Ryan. I think that a lot of those things look sustainable, especially with Jaden McDaniels. That by the time you're listening to this episode, there is an article that our Benny Hughes wrote about Jaden McDaniels' evolution. He goes through some really great numbers that Dave Moore cited and just pulling some numbers on his own. Right now, Jaden McDaniels, he's shooting 62.5% in effective field goal percentage. That's the second highest amongst our current regular rotation players, just behind Rudy, who obviously is just at the rim. It's crazy because that is really buoyed by his 53.8% mark from perimeter. That's crazy. That is the highest number for players that are actually shooting at volume right now in the NBA. Now, that may not be sustainable, but I think that he's shooting with such confidence. And, you know, Jim Peterson talks about this. Benny talks about this in his article too, is that his confidence level is there because he believes in his role in the team now. And he feels that there's an actual offensive role for him now. When I was there in Sacramento and I was watching him warm up, you know, shoot around before the game with some of the assistant coaches. And I know basketball players in the NBA during shoot around, they make like, you know, 90% of their shots, you know, but he was playing one-on-one with one of the assistant coaches and he's shooting these like wild 1 foot turnaround fading away threes. And he was just like cashing them. And he was just laughing. And again, I'm not saying that's what translates into the game, but the fact that he's just having fun, he's confident. I may have mentioned this before, maybe it's because he had his second kid and now having two kids powers him up even more now where he's more confident in himself, that he's just playing so free out there. And so he's hitting shots from perimeter, but he's also hitting shots at the mid-range that we know. I forget who said this one time, that it feels like when Jaden drives to the rim, he like kind of tightly coils like a spring. And as soon as he's going to shoot it, he like uncoils himself. And all of a sudden he's got a hand right at the rim and just kind of laying it up. Or he's just like leaning backwards just far enough where an outstretched defender's hands cannot block him. And he has that mid-range leaning back floater off a slow step just on lock. And so, yeah, I definitely think Jaden's sustained excellence and his evolution is really going to help unlock, as we're seeing right now, the offense. Like Naz Reid hasn't even had a good season yet so far. And, you know, we understand why, but Jaden has kind of taken that mantle as that third offensive weapon right now, which, you know, usually was Naz off the bench. And so I'm really excited to see it. I think there's still more room to grow. And I think that, yes, maybe they're playing bad teams as part of it, but they're doing what they should be doing to bad teams, which is just like whacking them over the head, just pouring in points, 40-point quarters, things like that.
Yeah, and with the bad teams thing, I'm kind of – my main thing is like it feels like this is the only time – a lot of times the schedule gets brought up only in this case, like, well, they beat bad teams. It's like, well, where was this 12 months ago when they were struggling and they had a tough part of the schedule? Like, I just feel like the bad teams stuff gets focused on a little bit too much. And I'm not saying, like, we need to throw a parade because they blew out Utah or whatever. They beat Brooklyn and Charlotte. But a lot of good NBA seasons are built on the back of just demolishing bad teams or even mediocre right. teams. So mm-hmm. I was just kind of looking at like their rest of schedule metrics. It doesn't, I mean, there's going to be difficult parts, easy parts, whatever. like, there isn't like schedule wide. It's not like they're like, oh, they're first in strength of schedule or mating. No, they're average in the Western Conference. Like, it's not really going to get harder. This is what the schedule is. You're going to play bad teams. You're going to play good teams. But yeah, to your Jaden point, this is a leap. Like, this, whatever you're projecting for the future, or I guess ideally this year of them winning a championship, it was always going to be with Jaden being this type of player that we've seen so far. And basically like the third best scorer on the team, which clearly been so far this season. And we'll talk about Randall in our next topic as like their second best offensive player. But yeah, like Jaden being their third best scorer and their second best defender behind Rudy, like that's the path for them to being really, really, really good. And this is the leap they always needed from him. And it's been really cool. I mean, Jaden's just like one of the best stories on the Wolves. You think about, there's not very many players on this roster that have been here more than a couple of years. Obviously, Nas is the longest standing player on the roster. And then Ant and Jaden in the 2020 draft are the next two, and everyone else is kind of relatively new. And so to have that type of player really exploding into, I don't know, like the 90th percentile, but what we thought he could be when Finch originally got here, and like he DNP'd him the first game and then immediately started, basically never left the starting lineup almost after that. it's been cool to see him like hit the peak that we've all kind of wanted.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of Jaden fans, and we all know that Ant loves to pump up his teammates a little bit extra. And I'll never forget when I got to go to cover some of those initial games in Sacramento a couple years ago. You know, he just kept yelling to, you know, whatever little media that was still, you know, before fans were allowed into the arena, like, you know, don't record me, like record Jaden, like that. He's a superstar. Like, he's going to be a superstar. And so I was like, okay, well, that's kind of Ant being Ant. But I do believe that Ant does empower his teammates to become the best versions of themselves. And Jaden, for, you know, as quiet as he is, and it seems like he's just a guy who's just kind of like there, he's really, I think, feeling, again, I'll go back to that confidence and believing in himself and believing in this team, believing in his teammates. And yeah, I mean, I talked about Nas maybe not necessarily hitting his stride yet. You know, Dante's been playing pretty well this season compared to his struggles early last season. We still have the whole point guard situation where it's like, okay, well, maybe Mike Conley or Rob Dillingham, they haven't quite come around yet. And so there's still so much room for them to grow. So being at fourth right now, you know, I think that's good, because you would look at first and, you know, maybe watch a Wolves game and think, okay, well, they're not like the best offense ever, but the numbers are there and it's going to back it up. And I do feel like that's what's going to, you know, carry them as we kind of watch like the sliding scale of, yes, the defense is obviously our weak point right now, and it will probably get better. But we are kind of stepping, you know, pedal to the metal on that offense. And even think about like TJ Shannon, who hasn't played in, you know, 2 to 3 games now. He's a guy too, who should be helping the offense. You know, we talk so much about his transition ability, hit the hours and the numbers of shots he put in the gym working on his 3-point shot. You know, that was there early in the season, the preseason, summer league. And so I think he's another guy that we could throw into the mix that'll even help our offense more. So I'm really excited about it. I'm very optimistic about the offense.
Yeah, and to touch on the point guard stuff, I think like people have, there's been a lot of discussion with like Dante in the starting lineup, and he's not the point guard. Like, I don't know how to like tell people that, but like Ant is the point guard. He already is that. Like, and if he's not, Randall is. Like, Dante is not, like, bringing the ball up anymore. They tried that the first game, and they really haven't gone back to it. Ant is bringing the ball up. Randall's bringing the ball up. And then, obviously, like, Mike plays a lot of point guard minutes. And, though that's what it's going to be. And I'm just, like, to touch on that point of it, I feel comfortable with where the point guard minutes are at when, obviously, Dillingham plays a lot of it, but it's like basically just Ant and Mike that are the point guard minutes. And that, to me, that works. But let's talk about Julius Randle, who has just been really as the best season of his career. If he keeps this up, he'll have a good shot at making All-NBA. But the one stat I found is he leads the league in points per possession in isolation possessions. And that's filtering out kind of the players with not enough. Some guy that took one ISO possession the entire and hit a jump shot, so he's way above everyone at a sample size of one. But if you, it's like if you have three a game, Randle leads the league in points per possession on ice goes. So my howl or foul is his isolation game will continue being this good the rest of the year.
Ooh, I'm howling, baby. I'm howling on this one for sure. Julius Randle, he's a guy. I tweeted this out on Twitter back in March 15, 2021. And I said that I'm pretty sure Julius Randle would easily win a Red Bull King of the Rock one-on-one NBA competition. He's just a guy where he's such a load to handle. And we bemoan, I see a lot of fans and myself last season as well too, bemoan a little bit about his style of play. He's just kind of backing guys down and kind of getting his own rebound, putting it back in. But there's been a noticeable difference in the way that he's playing now where he's facing up a lot more. I feel like he's made those adjustments in the offseason where he's just not backing down and then getting picked. You know, that happened, I think, a couple times early in the season. But he's really adjusted, I feel like. There's obviously going to be hard matchups. I mean, OKC is a tough matchup for everyone. Maybe, you know, the Pacers, even like the Blazers for you know, the way that they play that aggressive style of hounding on-ball defense, where it's going to be hard for him. But he really has seemed to kind of figure out what levers to pull in certain situations. I was looking at his numbers. So going into today before they play on Friday, Julius Randle is averaging a career high an assist percentage, which is 28.9%. His turnover percentage is the lowest it's been since his all-NBA years about 3 or 4 years ago. And so I think, again, that's a testament to, one, the continuity that some fans like to laugh about, like, oh, okay, continuity, whatever. But that is part of it. You know, he's feeling comfortable, he knows what to do, and he's adjusting. He's not a guy in his late 30s now where, you know, he has no more room to grow and he is what he is. You know, he's still actively evolving. Yeah, I think I saw someone on, it was maybe one of the guys on Crunch Wears No Pants, maybe it was Brandon, who had said that, like, Julius might be one of the only players that's played on the Timberwolves as he's actively entering and in his prime at the moment. I mean, we talk about Kevin Garnett, obviously. Karl-Anthony Towns, as you can say as well, too. Kevin Love was kind of getting there, but it's been a while, you know, prior to that in terms of how many guys are actually getting in their prime, not like, oh, they're a little older, over the hump, things like that. So I'm a howl. I think it's great. Ryan, how do you feel about Julius Randle being his ISO game being this good the rest of the year?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a howl. I think the action they're doing with Randle is very repeatable. And I have an article, you mentioned Benny's Jane McDaniels article coming out tomorrow. On Friday, I'll have a Randle isolation article coming out. And I watched all so far, there's not that many of them, all the Randle isolation possessions to start this year. And they just, everything that's going on there seems repeatable. Basically, there aren't many guys that can just guard Randle straight up one-on-one in the league. If there's a lot of centers that are just like too slow to keep up with Randle. And there's a lot of power forwards that aren't big and strong enough to keep up with him. So a lot of times when a bigger guy gets on him, he's shooting over him. He's driving around him. And then when a small, it kind of, the isolation possession turns into basically a post up and they get him. You take the small into the paint, and then a lot of times when there's just a clear disadvantage defensively for the other team, they're bringing a second guy. And even if they don't even like fully double, there's a good possession that'll end up in this article that I write where this is the Knicks game where like Brunson is just like taking a half step off Dante to try to help. I don't remember who was guarding Randle at the time. I don't think it was Kat or Mitchell Robinson, but it was like a half step off him, and Randle just swings the ball to Dante for a decent look from three that goes in. And that's the type of stuff Randle and DiVincenzo are a perfect pairing for that type of, I would always try to any of these isolation. They're kind of like, what's interesting is they're kind of half post up possessions, half isolation possessions for Randle. You could probably, if I use Synergy, you could use NBA.com as a similar to stat for this, but you could probably label them either way. But like having Dante one pass away is so great for these possessions because you just can't, you can't straight double one pass away because it's just going to be a wide open three for Dante, which is just death for a defense. And there's just very few guys that can straight up guard Julius Randle. And maybe that's kind of similar to the Rudy's discussion where it's a bigger advantage against these bad teams where if, like, just thinking of Oklahoma City, which Oklahoma City has a defensive option for pretty much everyone, where I think they'd probably put Jalen Williams on Randall, and maybe even if they wanted to go kind of funky with it, they'd put Chet on Randall and put...
Yeah, I mean, they'll use Caruso. You'll get Alex Caruso in there even sometimes. I mean, you'll get Kaysom Wallace in there. I mean, they got, you know, Aaron Wiggins. They got a slew of guys that they're going to throw. So, yeah, I mean, it's not a... He's not perfect against everyone, but yeah, definitely. I agree with you.
Yeah, OKC can do a lot of different things defensively. So maybe that's not even a good example. But, like, there's just very few guys that can straight up guard Randall. And then with... That was probably true with Cat, too. There's not a lot of guys that one-on-one can straight guard up Cat. It's kind of a little bit... Obviously, he's different. Cat is more like straight line speed and length with, like, a post-up, just a little simple hook. And where Randall is more just strength. But the difference is, like... Cat would get frazzled by the, and you can probably describe everything Cat does as frazzled. That's probably a good word for everything that goes on there. Not to disparage Cat. I will say, just a quick on Cat, just a classic Cat game again.
Oh, when I watched
when
that.
He played the Wolves. Yeah. Like, yeah. So good and bad, by the way, because like he had an offensive foul. It's just like, that's classic Cat. And just, he had a one, he hit a three in the next time drive. Next time down, pumped out of a three-pointer and just drove by whoever the defender was and dunked it. I'm like, yeah, that's good times. It's a lot of classic Wolf stuff as Jimmy seemingly tries to tank the Warriors as well. So a lot of classic Timberwolves stuff. But the difference between Randall and Cat is just I think their ability to deal with double teams with Randall is sensational basically at making the easy pass, making the tough pass out of a double team where it's just not – something that easily thwarts what the Wolves are trying to do. Randall can make the correct play out of if you try to bring a double.
Yeah, someone had posted or quote subtweeted at me about, I posted that stat about Julius Randall's points per game in isolation. They said that, you know, they would like to see maybe if the Wolves could work on something other than just isolations for these two players. And you know, I was kind of saying like, hey, like you're playing against teams that are lacking in talent and in size. And, you know, why wouldn't you use Julius and even Ant in these situations in isolation to go score on them? And so, you know, so long as the Wolves were struggling to beat bad teams in years past, like I don't care how they beat the bad teams. If it means posting up Julius Randle, having him score, was it 1.22 points per possession every time? Then we're running that every time, you know, until they can adjust. So, you know,
It's more if you include possessions that like end with a Randall pass. A lot of these right. like surge platforms, they only include basically like when Randall shoots, free throws, or turns it over. Where if you add in the passes, like the possession I talked about with Dante, it was like 1.4 points per possession, which in a half court situation is like just phenomenal.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So excited about the Wolves offense. I'm excited about Julius Randle. Now, something that other people maybe were not so excited about, the Wolves had their first NBA Cup game last Friday, I believe it was, and they had the green court out there. It was the very bright green court that you could not have unseen if you watched it on TV, and Ryan, you were there in person. So our last one for Howl or Foul today, the green court is the worst thing you've ever seen.
Okay, worst thing you've ever seen is a bit hyperbolic, but I went Howl. It's pretty bad. I will say it's probably worse on TV than it is in person, but it's not good. And I one funny thing because I posted a lot of times. I mean, it's not that crazy. Like I post stuff and then I retweet it myself with the Canis account. It's not that I know what's gonna happen. Like I know it's gonna go semi viral or whatever. And that was a good. I got to the game early and posted those pictures. And then I'm walking out of the arena and I got a jump scare. Rachel Nichols comments. Just it was a simple comment, just like oof, that's bad, and it was a little bit of a jump scare as a Wolves fan. I was like, oh, Rachel Nichols,
what are you doing here?
so that was kind of funny, but yeah, it's probably not as bad as it is on TV, and I mean the Wolves are up by 40 in that game. We'll see if we have to stare at it longer Friday night against Sacramento, but yeah, it's just not. I don't like it. None of the players or coaches seem to have an issue with it, which I guess fine. It's not as bad as the red courts where it feels like you're playing in the seventh layer of Dante's Inferno or whatever. I don't know. I just, I don't, I would prefer, I would prefer if, like, the green or whatever color these teams are using was, like, the accent color. You left the hardwood alone as, like, the, what is it, brown. And then you just put the big trophy in the center. That would be my preferred option. But I don't know, maybe the, is this, are you garnering the TikTok generation with the bright courts? I don't know. It's beyond my, purview.
Brighten up your home with help from Menards. Illuminate your home with LED light bulbs from Fight Electric. They provide light that lasts with a rated life of over 10,000 hours. Don't wait to finish your projects. Save big money on Fight Electric LED light bulbs now at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. Yeah, I personally, again, I know you said maybe it was a little hyperbolic because it's not the worst thing you've ever seen, but it's pretty bad. I'm saying foul. I don't think that they're the worst thing I've ever seen. And I'll say this. I was not a huge fan of like the neon green highlighter uniforms that they had when they first came out. I just remember Kat wearing them, and it was just like kind of an eyesore. But the neon green court, I feel like, honestly, look, I know I'm in the minority here, but I feel like the neon green court makes for a good look in like very small doses. You know, the whatever four games that they're going to play on it, if not, you know, we'll see where they go in the cup. But
just two home games.
Yeah, two home games, right? Two home games, you know, and potentially, you know, a third one later on. And so, you know, what are the alternatives to that is kind of my answer to that. You know, you don't want the neon green. Okay, sure. But, you know, I believe the first year I went back and looked, the first year they had like a very light blue, like a slate bluish, like gray kind of thing, and that was fine, but to me that was a little boring. It's like, okay, it's like the pale blue and the gray quartz was just like, man, like there's no creativity behind it. That's like literally we're trying to erase anyone even thinking about the court. And I feel like the point of the NBA Cup is to like, all right, well, how do we know it's going to be a cup game? That green will burn it in your eyes. You will not unknow that that is an NBA Cup game. So I feel like mission accomplished there. I think last year's, or maybe even a little bit more of an eyesore to me, if you remember correctly, it had a really bright green in the middle. It was like a circle. And then it kind of faded out to like a lighter green or darker green at the end. And I didn't like those as much because I feel like this green that I saw was more of like a lime green. Like, I don't feel like it's that neon green. I understand that when it's reflected or you're watching on TV, it may look neon. But just from what I saw in the pictures and just looking at some of the Getty images, it didn't look like it was a lime, like a neon green. It was more of a lime green. Last year's felt more like a neon green. But anyways, I think Jaden said something, I believe it was Jaden that said about the court. He's like, you know, it's cool to me. It just reminds me of like that money we're trying to win the NBA Cup. And yeah. I was like, yo, that's pretty sick. Like, so yeah, I don't hate it. I wouldn't say I love it, but I feel like it's getting a little too much flack from just kind of the talking heads. Like, oh man, that's so bad. I agree with you. I think the red is way worse. It's just like painful to the eyes. Like it hurts. At least the screen is like, yeah, I mean, it's not great, but it's kind of funny at least. It's the Nickelodeon court.
Yeah, I think it looks worse than it is, I would probably say, and that's kind of why, I don't know, you try to, sometimes I'm not a big person that tries to search, like, go after the social media views or whatever. That one I knew, like, the minute I'm like, I'm gonna post this is, people are gonna hate this, and that's all I'm going for. It's like, this is gonna get numbers on social media.
That's right.
So you gotta
you gotta play the game.
You gotta go after it sometimes.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to Apex Alpha. My pick for leader of the pack this week, Rudy Gobert. I know it's popular and to like mock up trade selections, which I even have a solid Rudy trade for later in this pod. But just everything they're doing, he's so essential to what they're trying to do. Just because the defense without him is just like, just an abomination, basically. And it'll get better. It won't be this bad. But at least 11 games into the season, they're just getting cooked. Put them off the court. And at least against these bad teams, he's back to, like, the first 8 games or whatever, it was like, oh, what's going on here? And I think he's back to looking to what we all would have expected. All defensive level player. And I do kind of like the touch around the rim he's kind of been having. A little bit of step through, a little bit of finishing ability, and it's like the bar is on the floor for him in that area. But I've liked what I've seen. I guess I'm curious. I don't know, like the game against Sacramento, I don't know, like the Sabonis was just awful. I don't think he was healthy. I don't think that was a fair even representation of of Sabonis, but it's been good to see him dominate the matchups we'd like to see him dominate, and I guess we'll see. They got Denver up on the schedule. That's always been a fairly solid. No one has a good matchup for Denver, but Rudy's probably as good of a Jokic defender as you can see, which is basically no one. I still want to see it against the better teams, but I don't know, looking at their upcoming schedule, they're not coming. So at least in the short term, it's been good to see him just absolutely dominate, which I think he's dominated even more than the scoreboard shows, which is often the case with Rudy. But, I mean, he's far from the only player that's playing well, but he's driving winning as much as anyone.
I like that pick, Ryan. I think it was last Utah game where I posted something on Blue Sky about, when did Rudy Gobert all of a sudden decide to start finishing everything? You know, like it looks so awkward sometimes, but it just seemed like super, super determined to go in there and just kind of finish his layups. Or he had a lot of dunks recently where it's just like, again, I get it. He's playing the Kings and the Jazz, but he was just finishing strong in there. And even on defense, yeah, he opened up the Sacramento Kings game by blocking a Sabonis mid-ranger and went, you know, coast to coast with the layup that I'm sure everyone who was watching that game was like, no, 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 no. And then he finished it somehow. But yeah, I mean, talking about Sabonis, we'll talk about the Kings in a little bit. But yeah, he did not look good out there. He did not need to be out there. And the Kings, my Kings, not doing so well. But yeah, I'm really happy about Rudy Gobert's play lately. He seems like he's been locked in. When I was talking to him after the game in Sacramento, I mean, he was just like, I got to set the tone. He was taking it very professionally. This is a Rudy that we've come to know. You know, professional effort, ultimate floor raiser. And, I think these are the games that sometimes people don't tune in for or don't look at. And when they say that, oh, Gobert's trash, doesn't do anything for the team, you talk about people liking to dunk on him. It was even funny. I saw this on, funny to some, I think it was yesterday, I saw on social media, there was some clickbaity, rage bait video, Instagram reel was on my feed about someone just kind of clipping all the bad Rudy Gobert plays, him getting choked by Draymond, or him crying after not making the All-Star team. And it's kind of like making fun of him. Just typical like Gobert slander, which we've all seen. And I saw it because there was a like from someone that I knew that liked that video. And I was like, who was that? And it was Naz Reid liked that video. Now, at first I was like, what does that mean? Because this is a newer video. This only came out a couple of days ago that someone posted. But I think like dunking on Rudy is just naturally like something that the team does on their own. It's not coming from a hateful place. Like, we hate Rudy. It's just kind of like, Rudy's fun to dunk on. I'll never forget. It was when they played the Kings, I think it was 3 years ago, that they were all huddled around Rudy watching this MMA main event where a French guy lost to an American guy in the main event, lost his belt. And everyone's kind of dunking on Rudy and they were laughing at him and stuff. But like, it's all in good fun. So I think, you know, people dunking on Rudy, like, that's fine. I think that's okay. But yeah.
Awesome, yeah. Who is your Apex Alpha this week?
I'm going with Anthony Edwards is my Apex Alpha. Go back to
out of the box.
That's right. That's right. I'm going for the easy pick here. I'm saying this because obviously he's been playing well coming back from injury after that Knicks game, but against the Sacramento Kings on Sunday, I was there for that game back in my hometown, and during the post game media, I was one of the only people, I was actually the only person there at first. And so the PR staff was like, you know, who do you want to talk to? And I was like, oh, I want to talk to Rudy. I don't want to be too egregious. I was like, just Rudy and Ant. And so I talked to Rudy first. And when it was Ant's turn to go up, I was waiting on the side. And he had just kind of, I think, come out of the showers. And they go up to ask him. And then Ant just goes on this like profanity lace like tirade about like, why does everyone want to talk to me for? Like, I don't want to talk. I didn't have that good of a game. I didn't even score 30 points. Like, there should be a rule that if I don't score 30 fucking points, you can't talk to me or whatever. He's like, who asked for me? And then like, I'm the only one there, so I'm just pretending not to like pay attention or looking around or whatever. And he's like, y'all should talk to Jaden. Jaden missed like two shots. He's a great game. Well, you don't want to talk to Jaden? And then I was kind of like, well, I already requested him. I think everyone, you know, the PR staff knew that. This is just kind of Ant being Ant. And then eventually, you know, he looked over at me. He was like, all right, man, come over here. And he was like super pleasant to talk to. He's just, you know, Ant being him. And so, yeah, it's funny because he complained he didn't score 30 points against the Kings, but he scored 30 points within three quarters against the Utah Jazz. He is shooting the three ball really well. He's had these like crazy explosions where in the blink of an eye, if you miss like a 4 or 5 minute span, He just dropped like 15, 20 points in that. He did that against the Kings in the second quarter. He did that against the Jazz in the third quarter. And so he's just really, I think, locked in. Hopefully that all that injury hamstring stuff is behind him. I know Jalen Green came back from a hamstring that he missed most of the season. He played in one game. Second game back, he restrained the thing, and now he's out another month. And so hopefully, again, knock on wood, that doesn't happen to Ant. But yeah, not the most creative pick, but definitely seeing Anthony Edwards. I think he's been leading the team really well the last couple games here.
Yeah, your story out in Sacramento is just such unbelievably classic Ant. Like, it's hard to put into words how that's just every day with him. That he's like, I don't want to talk to anyone. And then, yeah, okay, we'll let's do this. Speaking of Sacramento, though, we'll move on to prey of the week, who the Wolves made their prey. And I just put Golden One center, and I want to talk to you as a as our resident Kings expert. The Wolves have won six straight road games out in Sacramento, and also on the side, 11 straight wins against Russell Westbrook. It's like multiple teams over the course of, what is the Sacramento feeling? I mean, the vibes in Sacramento are just poor. It's bad. But your Kings buddies, you get to. I get they're probably just dead inside, right?
Yeah, it's bad. It's bad, Ryan. I'm super plugged in with them. You know, I have a lot of friends over there that cover the team. And, you know, I try and watch, you know, Kings games I can. I listen to Kings podcasts. And when I was at the game on Sunday, like, I had already known it was bad. I knew the vibes were bad. I knew that, you know, the team, there were so many players that were unhappy with their role. There were players that felt like they needed to play, that deserved to play, that which is kind of getting usurped by veteran guys that were brought in who are terrible fits. And, you know, they haven't done a lot of winning. Now, when I was at Golden One, though, I will say, as someone that's grew up in the Sacramento area, been to, again, more Kings games I can count on my hands, like non-Wolves games. I've been to at least like probably 50 Kings games in my life in the last like handful of years. And like, no matter what the product was out there, we've seen some atrocious Kings teams, like talent-wise and their makeup and their roster. But yet, even though the teams were worse, like the crowd was always there, and the Kings fan base is great. Like, they're super loud, they're super loyal. They literally have fought for their team to stay in Sacramento and push legislation to make it happen. And so, you know, they're a great fan base, you know, all that said. And it was really, really sad when I went on Sunday. I went to Golden One. This was on a Sunday night. It's a weekend night. And it was a 6 p.m. tip, which is relatively early for a weekend tip in Pacific time over here. And the arena, by the time it was tip-off, was maybe half full. And I was just not used to seeing that. And, like, the Kings fans looking like they were just ready for the first opportunity to boo the team. Vivek was sitting center court, front row, with his arms folded. Next to him, he had GM Scott Perry. On the other side, he had Kings legend Peja Stojakovic there. And they were just getting booed so bad. And, you know, it was really sad to see, just in terms of, like, you know, the Kings fans deserve better than that. There's a lot of players on the Kings that, again, probably deserve to play for a better team, but they just kind of stuck together. They said it a bunch in the post-game press conference, too. They feel like they just don't have the personnel to play the defense that they need to. Yeah, exactly. Zach LaVine said that, our prodigal son. Yeah. But, you know, it's tough because, you know, there's rumors that they're going to blow it up. But Vivek Ranadive, the owner of the Sacramento Kings, is a guy, he's a billionaire. And how many times have you seen a billionaire not dig their heels into the position that they've took on a issue, which is he wants to build this team his way and he wants to see it through to the very, very end. And I don't know if he's going to sell. Yeah, I mean, it's unlikely he will, but he also has a very, very high profit margin if he does sell the team. But it's rough out there, Ryan. And I'll say that it was sad to see.
Yeah. Well, good for the Wolves, I guess. And we'll see if, I guess what's been interesting is last year, and I think maybe even the year before, the Kings and Wolves have split all the games, except every team keeps winning their road games. maybe that'll continue to be the trend. If the Wolves, we'll talk about the NBA Cup here quick. If the Wolves just simply beat the Kings tonight or Friday night and the Suns next Friday night, they're basically, that basically is because they beat Utah by 40, they're going to clinch a spot in the tournament or whatever, which I'm not sure that's a good thing because they're probably going to have to play Oklahoma City for a fifth time in this season. I'm not sure that's what you want. Ideally, they would have beaten Jazz by like one, so they go 3-1 and then miss the bracket, which is what they did two seasons ago. But that's probably ultimately just trying to win the games. But yeah, Leo, who is your prey of the week? Who did the Wolves make their prey?
My prayer of the week are the Utah Jazz. During the offseason, they had a change in leadership, and Danny Ainge put into charge his son, Austin Ainge, and he said that the days of tanking were behind them. They are 4-7 right now, which is currently not the worst. Lauri Markkanen's been rebuilding his trade value. He's had a pretty good season so far, and they even started Ace Bailey, and he's been playing well. He had a big dunk against the Wolves kind of in garbage time, but he had 20 points the other day. I think they scored 150 points against the Pacers or something crazy like that. So they're looking better, but everything else, Keontae George, he's one of the first picks that the Wolves ended up giving to the Jazz from the Rudy Gobert trade. He's putting up a lot of empty stats, despite the fact that he shot 50% in the two games against the Wolves in the last couple days. His overall effective field goal percentage is 47.6%. That's fifth worst on the Jazz rotation right now. I think Jace Frederick summed it up best when he tweeted out during that last Utah Jazz game. He said, "They better build a statue for Utah for Keontae George for his service as a tank master general. He is like a classic, like, hey, he's going to score 20 points. He might even get you 8 or 9 rebounds or assists here and there. And, you know, he'll have some good plays, but ultimately he's not really leading a team anywhere. He's kind of playing one-on-one basketball when he's scoring those points and kind of getting fouls. And so for those of you that tuned in to any of those Wolves games between the Jazz on Friday or this last Monday, it's really just been like a highlight fest. You know, I really want to go back to my praise of the week as a player that got dunked on. I could have gone with Kyle Filipowski, who got dunked on and won by Jaden in the last game. I could have gone with Yoan Berenger for Sally on the Jazz, and just, again, he was blocking shots and getting and one dunks, or even Joe, you know, crowd asking Joe to hawk up threes in garbage time. You know, they've really embarrassed the Jazz, and you know, at this point, who really even remembers what's gone out in the Rudy trade? Because it's just like, again, I'm not going to rehash that whole thing, but the Jazz are sitting here like trying to tank, and they're getting the fifth best pick at this point. And even right now, like the way they're playing, they're not going to make the play in, but they're also probably not going to get a top four pick either, you know, unless the lottery balls fall in their favor. So yeah, I'm saying the Utah Jazz.
Yeah, I will say on the Joe Ingles part, I think he's had too good of a career, and Krasinski tweeted this right out the night of the game. He's had too good of a career for like the, almost like the Luka Garza role of we're just going to be excited to see you score.
The victory cigar.
I get that, like, part of it is like the inbound wizard type of stuff. But yeah, I was kind of like, I don't know, if I was Joe, I'd feel a little bit like I'm not the mascot here. Like I've had a very good career, but I'm sure he didn't take it that way. But one last segment I wanted to talk about is basically just the Mavericks and Nico Harrison getting fired, which is not exactly a surprise given what was, it wasn't that long ago that, so Luka Doncic plays his final game with the Mavericks against the Timberwolves on Christmas Day of what was that, 2023 or 2024.
Yeah, it was pretty recent. Yeah, that's how recent it was. Yeah.
And I don't think that trade, the Luka trade to the Lakers, made any sense at the time. And like, one thing I've kind of seen is like, well, it didn't end up working out. And it's like, honestly, nothing that's happened, good or bad, for the Mavs has changed anything. Like, nothing. Like, it was bad when it happened. It continued to be bad, and it's continued to look bad. And they basically destroyed the entire fan base of the Dallas Mavericks. And I just think this was a move that was necessary to even try to move forward with whatever they're going to try to do. But ultimately, like, Cooper Flagg saves a lot of what's going to go on there. I think they should try to trade Anthony Davis, which I have a Wolves trade for that. But ultimately, like, they traded a lot of their picks building to this championship Luka Doncic team, and now they're out of picks, or they're down a lot of the picks, and I just don't know how they move forward, because ultimately, like, ownership probably made the right decision in this case, but like, they're culpable in this whole thing too. Like, if you are willing to fire him, what, like 9 months, 10 months after this bad trade, if you're willing to now see, like, you should have seen what you know now, Mavericks owner, you should have been able to see what was happening then. And I'll say this, this is not on like the top 100 list of crappy things the Adelsons have done.
Yeah, seriously.
I'll just put that out there. you can go do your own research and not that type of research on what I'm talking about there. It's a crappy aspect. I feel bad for Mavericks fans just because even if they, it's going to be a long road ahead. But I'll let you kind of talk about the Mavs first before I give you the AD trade I got for the Wolves.
I'm like terrified. This is like a movie that I know is going to have a bad ending because I'm going to try and dump on the Mavs right now. And I know that ultimately I'm going to have to theorize having Anthony Davis on the Timberwolves. But yeah, I agree with you. I mean, when I see a Luka Doncic play like a highlight, he had a really sick over the head, like driving pass that went like backwards to kick out on his own corner three kind of thing. I get mad. I turn into like that Arthur meme with his fist. Like I clench up when I see that because Obviously my hate for the Lakers is not unknown. But the fact that he was just kind of gifted to them just pisses me off so much. You know, Nico inherited Luka. He made some decent to good peripheral moves, you know, getting in Daniel Gafford and PJ Washington. You know, that's great. They made the finals, you know, well earned. He earned himself a multi-year extension. And then what? Boy got drunk, signed the shelf Klay Thompson to a $50 million deal. He went to play fantasy basketball with his old friend Rob Pelinka and traded for what we know now is the corpse of Anthony Davis. And then guess what he gets? He gets the gift of Cooper Flagg with a, what was it, less than 1% chance in the lottery. And so he'll be fine. He's going to get paid out just to sit at home and not do anything and not get harassed anymore. But it's super frustrating because I agree with you. The Mavs fans don't deserve it. They're a loyal fan base. They had like a super, super long, you know, you never know if it's real with these, but these sellout streaks in the arena where they, I think they sold out for like, I don't know, it was like 15 straight years or something like that or more. And then they finally came to end this season. The Mavericks, as we're recording this tonight, we're playing the Suns. And a lot of people thought they were playing at home. And so it's like, okay, well, are the Mavs going to really show up? And, you know, the Suns aren't that good. Maybe they'll kind of rattle off a win. They got within 3 points after trailing most of the game against the Suns. The Mavs did, but ultimately ended up falling short to the Phoenix Suns. And the Dallas Mavericks are still starting a team that would be an embarrassment to even some of the tanking teams that we're seeing around here because there's not a lot of talent outside of Cooper Flagg and not a lot of just like cohesion between the parts that are on there. They don't have shooting. They don't have a real point guard. It's kind of a mess.
Yeah. Okay. Are you ready for my AD trade?
I'm not ready for it. Blatantly, but please stealing. Go ahead. Yeah. No, go ahead. I'm not ready, but go ahead.
All right. So the problem with this trade is that if the Wolves are going to try to trade for Anthony Davis, is both them and the Mavericks are in the first apron, meaning neither team can take in more money than they give out, which if that's true for both teams, you literally have to have a dollar-for-dollar match, which is basically impossible. So you're going to have to rope in a third team. It's not that difficult because you can just send Brooklyn, who has cap space, just like anything, and that makes the trade work, basically. So the idea of the trade is, so the Wolves are trading for AD, and I don't even think this trade makes sense for the Mavs, but I want to look at this from the Wolves trade. Again, I'm taking it from Zach Lowe. Rudy, Mike, and Dillingham, and probably Leonard Miller, again, for salary cap purposes, for AD. So you're giving up on the Rob experience, you're punting on Mike Conley, basically, and you could swap out DiVincenzo for Mike Conley too. I think he'd probably try to, but the main thing is you're swapping Rudy for AD. And personally, if that's a trade that they could try to make, and it kind of would mean you'd probably want to try to find some sort of, you just traded like your 2 point guards. You'd probably try to find some sort of backup point guard in addition to this move. Maybe you're adding more money to take in one of Dallas's point guards, but the general idea of basically AD, Mike, and Rob for AD. Personally, that's something I would be very open to doing. I get the AD injury stuff. I just think that would be, just talent-wise, would be an incredible trade for the Wolves. And I also don't think it's probably all that realistic. Just in terms of, I don't think Dallas is going to end up doing that. But what do you think about the baseline of what I just laid out?
I think if this was like 2K, I would be like, yes, like I'm in. You know, turn off injuries, like put it in, you know.
Yeah.
But that's, yeah, I think ultimately that's what it comes to. I mean, Anthony Davis is not someone who just happens to be injured. He is chronically injured, and he's not getting any younger at this point. And I get it. If he is healthy, I do like that, because obviously he's bringing the defense that Rudy Gobert would bring, with obviously way more juice on the offensive end of the court. You know, he's not going to space the floor a whole lot, but, you know, more than Rudy probably can. Probably a better decision maker as well, too. But yeah, I just don't like risking. I don't like blowing the load on that. Again, I'm not saying that Rudy and Mike and Rob are going to net us a great, you know, like Alperen Şengün or someone that's like a great, great center. But at the same time, like, I'm not willing to roll the dice on this iteration of the Wolves on, hey, I hope Anthony Davis's legs are working today. You know, it's just too much, I think, to waste this window that we have where, again, are we in the Thunder stratosphere of competing for a championship? Maybe not in their elite tier right now, but we have an outside shot. If you add AD, even if AD's healthy, I still don't know if that makes them at an OKC tier. And it's a lot more risk in terms of, you know, not even scratching the surface of where you're at. Because say, you know, he's out for the majority of the season, it's like, it's going to be uphill sledding for them. And so I think I'm just too scared. I mean, I think the Wolves have done a great job in really building their team around players that are available. I'm not building around it, but, like, you know, having players on the team that are available. Kat obviously had some injury issues later on. And when you compare Kat to Julius, I mean, Julius had his shoulder injury that kind of sidelined him for the end of his Knicks tenure. But for the most part, Julius is a very available player. Ant obviously is young and available. Rudy is notoriously available, playing even through, you know, certain illnesses or pandemic illnesses that he'll play through. So, you know, I do think that availability is, I wouldn't say it's a best best ability, as I used to say with Andrew Wiggins, but I do think it's very important. So I'm a little too scared, Ryan. I'm just saying that. I'm just too scared.
Yeah, and I don't disagree. I just think that the talent level would be fair. Enticing, but maybe it's probably a kind of a dream scenario, because I'm not sure Dallas wants to do it. But let's move on. I will say, before we start, two words. I want to give a couple shout-outs to people. I've interacted with some fans of the show. Appreciate everyone that listens. But I'll shout out Cole, who I met at the Zach Lowe show. And I should have gotten their names, but the two guys that sent me the ticket in the first place to be able to go, I appreciate you guys, so shout-out to you guys. And then, weirdly, my parents at a bar, I think this was the first Utah game, they were just at the bar eating dinner, and saw the two people sitting next to them watching the Wolves game, and they interacted with them and talked to them and got them. My parents got them to watch or listen to our show. So I appreciate those. If you guys didn't end up listening, I think this is the first episode since that game. So if you guys are listening, appreciate it. Shout out to my parents and apparently the Berea tacos that they got that night. I'll have to go over to Oliver's in Roseville to check out the tacos, I guess.
Yeah.
I appreciate you guys, but
I don't know, Ryan. I
always love interacting.
I'll have to shout out one too.
Yep.
I have to shout out one too. I got a guy. I'm in a couple of different Wolves group chats on social media, on Twitter. I'm in a Wolves chat, and there's a guy that I go back and forth with. We don't always agree on stuff. This goes by Maz. And he also gave a shout out saying that he's been listening to our show a lot lately, and he really appreciates you know, our perspective. So shout out, Maz, if you're listening today. Appreciate you, brother.
Yeah. Well, just as people that don't do this full time and trying to grow this thing, appreciate everyone that gives us their time of day. But let's move on to our two words. Leo, what do you got?
My two words are be boring. Speaking of our podcast, no, I'm just kidding. Be boring for the Timberwolves. I think Ant said this during media day. He said greatness is boring. And I think that's exactly what's going on right now, that they're beating the crap out of these, you know, not play in at best teams. And five of their next six games are against teams that would be fortunate to sniff the play in as well too. I think it's okay to spam Julius and Ant, you know, mismatches, and it's okay to be boring and to win by a lot. You know, we shouldn't be like, oh well, they should be giving Rob like 30 minutes a game right now, where it's like, okay, well, maybe that's not going to help us win right now. And I understand that we do have to develop them, but sometimes being boring and winning games is okay, especially as we have big goals for ourselves this year. So my words, be boring.
Perfect. I got practice time. The Wolves have this weird quirk of the schedule. Honestly, it's the play or the NBA Cup tournament always screws with the schedule in November, December. But they got basically two sets of back-to-back games. And now between those are three straight off days. So Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, they're all off. So I put practice practice time. Basically, probably the first time that they've had multiple back-to-back practice days since the start of the season, where they can drill home on the things that are going well, fix that are going bad, which is a good time to do that after winning 5-6. So, very interested to see how it looks against Sacramento for the cup and the lime green, but also against Denver on Saturday, especially against a good team, one of their few matchups against a half-decent team in this stretch.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, the Kings just got blasted by the Trae Young-less Hawks today by 30 points. You always kind of don't want to play a team that's just been crushed by over 24 points, like for 3 or 4 games in a row. So it's a little scary. And so we'll see how that goes. But meanwhile, the Nuggets are rolling. They're about to win as we're recording this. I think their 5th or 6th game in a row against the Clippers. They were trailing at halftime, but then Nikola Jokic ended up putting up 50 points before the end of the 3rd quarter, and they're running away with it. So Denver will also be dangerous because they're on a winning streak. Yeah. So we'll see what happens there. But it should be some fun basketball after a little bit of a week of rest for everybody.
Yeah, and even after that, they got Dallas, 5s are bad, Phoenix or Washington, Phoenix, and Sacramento before the last NBA Cup group play game against OKC. Like, and even after that, Boston in a couple games against New Orleans. Like, the schedule really doesn't get tough, and we don't need to go down the whole schedule, but it's like Clippers, Phoenix, Memphis. None of those are worrying me. Like, so we're going to get to mid-December before we really get to any, like, multiple game stretch where it's like, they got 4 games. If we can just go 2-2 and then start beating up on bad teams again, that stretch isn't coming for a while. So it's like, I agree, like, don't get too high on the horse about beating up on bad teams. But it's just like, on the flip side, they're going to win like 50-something games if they just continue to do what they've been doing. I mean, there's been a lot of poor play, at least not of lately, but like in the first week or two. And they're still on a 52-win pace. And like I said, I get like the natural rebuttal to that. It's like, well, the schedule is going to get harder. Not really. On the whole, not really. Like 71 games, the next 71 games, this is what the NBA is. You have hard times, soft times, and if you split against good teams and kick butt against bad teams, you're going to win 50 games. And I think that's a legitimate path forward, but... Leo, any closing thoughts before we head into a nice weekend of Wolves basketball? And we'll regroup with going back to 2 pods a week after that.
Yeah, no, the Iowa Wolves, I'm going to give them a little shout out. They started off 2-0 this season.
Yeah, you're the only one watching them.
Hey, I know some guys in Crunch Wears No Pants have probably tuning in for a little bit. You know, Zion Pullen and Jules Bernard are looking good. So is Tristan New. Rocco Zakarski's got some burn. So shout out the Iowa Wolves. But yeah, we have a couple games leading up here. It's going to be a busy weekend heading in. So yeah, just enjoy the times. Keep tuning in. We appreciate you. And, you know, go Wolves, right? Let's do this.
Yep, I agree. Thank you everyone for listening, and we'll be back. Leo and I will be back early next week.
That's right. Get home, drive safe.
Go Wolves. Ayoo!